Hello, this is Kevin on the Monday Magazine. I'm with you till 4 o'clock, and I have a special guest in the studio with me. His name is Robin McInnes. Hello, Robin.
Hello. Yeah. Good afternoon.
Yeah, come a bit closer to the microphone if you can. Yeah, Robin is an art historian and also a, as it says on your card, Coastal and Geotechnical Services. Can you tell us what all that's about, Robin?
Well, I have a consultancy called Coastal and Geotechnical Services, and, well, essentially the work is about looking at managing the coastline of Great Britain and of Europe.
And
previously on the Isle of Wight, of course. But the geotechnical part really combines the disciplines of geology and civil engineering and looks in particular at issues such as coastal protection, ground instability, and providing advice and guidance to people who are affected by those kind of issues.
Right. Well, it's amazing. You've got two very distinct roles, haven't you? Art history and coastal management. Can we talk about the coastal management first?
Because
I gather that in a previous life you worked for the Isle of Wight Council in a similar sort of role, is that right?
Yes, for many years I worked for the Isle of Wight Council, and prior to that South Wight Borough Council. Dealing with managing different parts of the Isle of Wight coastline, and it was a fascinating place to work because, of course, the island's got this remarkably varied coastline.
Yeah.
And with lots of different rock types, some harder and some softer. And, of course, it makes wonderful scenery, but also can create particular problems in terms of how it needs to be managed because of the risks from erosion and cliff falls and flooding and landslides and all these other hazards.
Yeah, I see that every morning on my dog walk because I live in Chale and walk around Whale Chine and heading towards Chale Church from Whale Chine. There's quite a bit of erosion going on there. Ladder Chine is getting bigger every year, and it's fascinating to watch it. You can almost see it happening, can't
you? Well, the southwest coast, it faces out towards the Atlantic, and we get the southwesterly storm waves coming in from that direction, and it's one of the fastest eroding parts of the British coast, in fact.
Okay. Oh, well, I chose the right place to live. But can I ask you, before we talk about the art history, how did you get into this in the first place? What's your, it's like a potted life story I'm asking you for, but how did you come to the island and how did you become to be an expert in this subject?
Well, I was born in Scotland, and I came with my mother and my sister on holiday to Swanage, actually, when I was about four. We were on holiday there. We came on a paddle steamer to Totland Pier, and then we met some friends, and they took us on a drive around the island, and my mother decided to settle here. And for my first 2 years on the island, we actually rented part of Wolverton House at St. Lawrence, which is the Twining Tea family.
Oh, yes.
Who very kindly allowed us to live there. And my mother remarried Dr. Eric Laidlaw, who was the medical superintendent at the Royal National Hospital for Chest Diseases. That's at Steep Hill, where the Ventnor Botanic Garden is now. And
yes.
So I was brought up in a very lovely part of the British coast, on
the
undercliff of the Isle of Wight.
Yeah, a legend to the undercliff. Yeah, well, we won't go into all that story about the undercliff and what's happening there. But what year did you actually come to the island and pursue a professional career here then?
Well, after school on the island and then at university at Southampton, I read geology. I worked for Hampshire County Council for a little while after that, and joined the former Isle of Wight County Council in 1972 as a junior engineering technician.
Yeah.
And with my degree, I thought I'd be able to make a good contribution. But on my first day, my manager said, "There's only one thing you need to know, and that's how to make everyone a good cup of tea."
Some things never change, do they? Well, did you achieve that? Did you make a good cup of tea?
I think so, because I stayed on and passed through various jobs, and then I transferred actually on the week of the great hurricane in 1987, I became deputy borough surveyor of South White Borough Council.
On that very day?
Yes, and then so there I became increasingly involved with coastal and geological issues, and then I became borough surveyor, and at the same time I started to get involved more in coastal issues regionally and nationally, and I chaired a network of the coastal engineers, first for the central south coast of England, the Standing Conference on Problems with the Coastline, and following David Court, who had founded that organisation, and then I became chairman of the Coastal Defence Groups of England and Wales, so I took on the national role.
Okay, so you would it be fair to say that you are one of the national experts on the issue?
Well, I...
Certainly
one of them, and you know, we've got this wonderfully varied coastline, not just on the island, but in the British Isles, and so it's a very interesting and fascinating area.
Mm.
And the study of coastal issues and how one manages the coast has been a significant part of my work. Carrying on from that after I left the council for my own consultancy.
Yeah.
And so now I work advising the European Commission on coastal issues and the United Nations as well. So
grief. Well, you're a busy man. So, yeah, you must have huge levels of expertise. So with that in mind, and being very parochial, we've all been following the local news about what's happened at Totland, haven't we, where the there was a landslide, I believe, wasn't there, that closed off the coastal path there. Is that something that you would have got involved in, or have you got any thoughts about why it's taking... Apparently, it seems to take such a long time to put these things right. Have times changed? Is it simply a question of funding, or?
Well, I've not had a direct involvement, but I would have done probably in the past. You know, if I'd still been there, but the island has this very varied coastline. Parts of it are quite unstable. The cliffs are generally quite weak, and they're often quite steep, over-steepened, and very much affected by the weather in terms of rainfall and groundwater. It has a big impact on significant lengths of the island's coastline.
Yeah.
And areas like that in the past, in the first and second halves of the 20th century, coastal defence works were undertaken. Those were before the days of when you had to produce cost-benefit analyses to justify the expenditure. And,
oh, yeah.
And now, increasingly over the years, the criteria for getting funding from the government has got more and more difficult. And obviously, in times of austerity such as this, there's with the lack of public funds available, it's extremely hard to get projects off the ground. And whereas perhaps... 10 or 20 years ago, it was possible to get 100% government funding for coast protection schemes if you could demonstrate the economic benefits. Now, it's significantly more difficult, and so that's a real challenge for people who are trying to get funding to do these kind of schemes.
So does it come down to us here on the Isle of Wight, the council having to raise money itself to deal with these issues, whereas before it would have been fully funded by the government?
Well, that's right. The rules were changed to try and give local authorities perhaps greater scope for doing schemes that they wanted to do, but coming with that, there was the requirement that you had to put in part of the money, and of course most local authorities haven't got any available money to put into schemes like that. So and of course some schemes just aren't going to meet the criteria for any form of government funding, so unfortunately it's very hard to get those sort of schemes off the ground.
Okay. Well, we must talk about more cheerful and artistic things, because that's why you're here. But it's a fascinating subject, and we could probably have a separate interview just about that issue, but we won't. Are there times when the art and the civil engineering and coastal management actually come together?
Well, yes, I have had this opportunity, because for about the last 8 years, I've been doing a series of research projects for the Crown Estate. And the Crown Estate own much of the coastline, the shoreline, and the coastal waters around the whole of the British Isles. And I've been producing a series of studies looking at how historical artworks, landscape paintings, drawings and prints, looking back over the last 250 years, can help us understand how the coastline's changed over that time.
Oh, wow.
And I started off, I was fortunate to obtain a scholarship from the National Maritime Museum, which funded a pilot study of art and the coastlines of Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. And then the Crown Estate took over from there, and I did a study of East Anglia, where there's obviously very aggressive coastal erosion. And then I produced national guides for England, Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland. So we've covered the whole of the British coast now. So that's been a very good example of bridging the disciplines of art and science together.
What's the outcome of that? Is it as obvious as, you know, looking at a photo, a painting from, say, the 1800s and saying, comparing that with a map or a photograph of that same location today?
So that was the essence of it. But, of course, one needs to know whether the painting was a true and accurate representation. So as part of the studies, I developed a ranking system so that we could identify those artists for each part of the coastline who we could guarantee that they produce accurate depictions.
Yeah, as opposed to using too much imagination.
That's right, imagination. And so if we know these artists did actually paint accurately, we can then start to use their work to support our understanding of coastal change and coastal science. And what the studies have shown is that really that such historical artworks are a very valuable but currently underused resource that those involved in coastal management could make better use of. So for each of these national reports I did for Wales and Scotland and so on, I've provided like a short list of those artists and their works that can be relied upon as a true record.
Oh, I see. Oh, fascinating. But where did this love of art begin? Where does it come from? Because it does sound like a strange mix, doesn't it?
Well, I think I've always been interested in art. I did my A-level art at school, and living on the Isle of Wight, of course, the Isle of Wight was one of the most painted parts of the British coast in through the 18th, 19th and to the early 20th centuries. And so we've got this very rich art heritage here. And I first started collecting art, I suppose, in the early 70s and bought my first Brannan engraving, and it went on from there.
Yeah. For those who don't know, is that Charles Brannan?
This is George Brannan.
George.
There was George, who was the father, and his two sons, Alfred and Philip.
Okay. Who, I don't know where Charles came from, but it shows how much I know.
And Alfred Brannan, he went on to, of course, found the Isle of Wight County Press.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So you started collecting those, from a very early age then?
Yes, that's right, yes.
Were you still at school, or had you just begun
work? No, I'd left school.
So you were earning money, so
yes.
You spent it all on art.
That's right.
Okay. And now you publish books. Could you talk to us about the books that you produce?
I wrote my first book, I think, when I was about 23, which was, I'd done quite a lot of travelling in Scandinavia, and I wanted to write a travel book about Scandinavia. So I wrote to Collins, the publishers, and they said, well, we don't really want a book about Scandinavia, but would you be willing to write one about the Isle of Wight? That was my first book, as I say, about 1974 it came out.
Yeah.
And then I had the idea, probably 4 or 5 years later, of perhaps writing a book about the history and landscape of the island, but illustrated with paintings.
Yeah.
Paintings, drawings and prints. And that proved quite successful. I wasn't sure how a book with paintings would go, but it went very well, and it was also the start of a long collaboration with Peter Cross of Cross Publishing,
who's
since published most of my books, and trying to make each one better than the last one. They've got increasingly more elaborate and more coffee table books, and so I've now done this, my latest book. It's my 16th. So
wow,
over the years.
And you're not running out of material then?
Not really. No, I'm underway with another one at the moment.
Are you?
It's nearing completion. So
yeah, but how do you go about deciding what to put in the books? Is it a case of you scouring galleries, or how do you do it? How do you find the material?
Well, I've been collecting pictures and prints for quite a long time, I've got quite a lot of my own. But there's lots of keen art collectors on the island, and there's wonderful collections of Isle of Wight paintings in many galleries up and down the country, including in the National Collections. And the Isle of Wight was one of the most painted parts of the British coast. In fact, for example, between 1800 and 1900, over 1,000 Isle of Wight works were exhibited at the Royal Academy.
Wow.
And the other major London exhibitions. So there's this huge art resource to draw on.
Yes.
And there's BBC Your Paintings, which is a wonderful archive. It's got every oil painting in every public collection on their website.
Oh, I see.
And you can trawl through if you know. You can search by gallery or region or by artist, so I've uncovered a lot more paintings. And
what do you think the fascination is? So someone who buys one of your books, what is it that they are buying? What are they looking for? Is it the art? Is it the history? Or is it all of that?
On the island there's, firstly, I think the Isle of Wight's got one of the highest hardback readerships in the country.
Okay.
Also, being an island, as in the past, as in centuries gone by, when the artists came, there's a particular fascination, I think, with being an island and those sort of boundaries.
Yeah.
People like to collect books about the island, and they're very interested in local history and art and photography, for example. There's so many interesting images and the history of the island is explained through art very well.
Yeah.
So I think people do like to have nicely illustrated books that tell the story of the island.
And of course you don't just even publish the books, as if you weren't busy enough. You also have a hugely popular annual exhibition, and I think you mentioned the next one in October is your 31st.
That's correct, yes. I've held an annual exhibition of landscape paintings, firstly in St Lawrence and then for 2 or 3 years in Shanklin, but then the Winter Gardens for many years were quite large exhibitions, and they started off exhibiting historical works of art, Victorian Edwardian paintings, but then I felt I needed to do something different, so I started an art competition for the best landscape painting of the island. And
I remember
that, and so I produced two of my books based on that, based on the exhibited artworks, and that's gone on, and the artists won't let me stop now. So so now I hold it at, after the Winter Gardens exhibition area wasn't available, moved to the coach house at East Dean at Bond Church, which is a wonderful display area. And so I've been there for the last 4 years, and we open up again in the first week in October.
Good grief. Do you never get tired? Because you're travelling the world, aren't you, pursuing your other career? You're doing scholarships, you're studying. You must never get a free moment. If you do get a free moment, what do you like to do to relax? Or don't you ever relax?
As opposed to work, I find writing and the art side quite a relaxation, something quite different.
And that your therapy, sort of, in a way.
I think so, yes, that's right, yes.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah, it's been fantastic to talk to you. If people want to know more about what you do, particularly on the art side, how can they find out? You have a website, don't you?
Yes, there's a website. It's www.robinmcinnisbooksandimages.com. So it's all one word, so it's a bit of a mouthful. It's got details of all my books there.
We spell McInnes, McInnes, don't
That's
we?
That's correct, yes.
So it's Robin McInnes
Books and Images.
Booksandimages.com.
That's it. Okay. Yes, thank you.
Brilliant. And the next milestone is a new book coming out.
Well, I've my last book, which came out in July, was called British Coastal Art 1770 to 1930.
Yes.
That's going very well, and my loyal subscribers have very kindly bought quite a number of the copies of that. And
yeah.
I'm currently working on a book that I've wanted to do for some time. It's a dictionary of Isle of Wight art. So all the paintings and images that I've found, put them together into one book, so people have got a proper reference work for the future, which I hope will be very helpful for people interested in art and will be able to learn more about the, any paintings they may have hanging on their walls.
Okay, fantastic. Well, it's, as I said, it's been lovely talking to you. You've got so many stories to tell. I could keep you here all afternoon, but I know you've got to get going. Thanks very much for coming in, Robin.
It's a pleasure.
And hopefully we'll get you back in again sometime. Perhaps just before October, we can talk about your next exhibition then.
That'll be good. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, that was Robin McInnes.